Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. I know you have plenty of options, and you are very appreciated for being here and for listening to what I'm going to present. This is my sixth DevCon. I think I didn't miss anyone since DevCon 2, and it's the first time I speak, so it feels pretty great. The content I have prepared, I prepared very carefully, so let's get into it. When I was thinking, what's the best content I can bring to DevCon? I thought, well, my work at PoApp for the past 5 years has been pretty intense and has exposed me to lots of experiences that, unless you live through them, it's somewhat impossible to learn of. It's like in startups, you learn by doing. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna share what I've done. So these are some little bullet points. One of my personality traits is that I'm extremely upfront about how I think. So this is why the first type item is offering unfiltered first-hand information of how to feel when a Web3 startup, especially the painful parts. I'm not here to sell you, yeah, I run a startup and things are gonna be fine, more like the opposite. Then, as part of that experience, I want to make clear what's different on the Web3 ecosystem than the Web2 ecosystems. Running startups is extremely painful in all ecosystems, but Web3 has several specific types of pain, so I want to cover some of them. And after all that pretty frightening information I want to present, I want to still make clear that for certain type of people, not only it is worth trying, it is what makes sense doing. So you will see why. A quick intro about me, although I am seeing most of those that I'm seeing, I know you and you know me, but you may get some tidbits that you didn't know. I am 37. I live most of my life in Buenos Aires. Being raised in Buenos Aires has shaped my personality pretty specifically, so it's a major piece of information. Argentina has a very deep crypto tradition, and that has given me a privileged view, specifically for what crypto is useful for, what's not useful for. So that's a key part of how I got to work with where I am. Up until 2015, I had a pretty average job as a computer repair person. I was a computer technician. In 2015, I was pretty fed up with my lifestyle. I wasn't happy how I was doing, so I was seeking for a change. I was already somewhat into Bitcoin, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go full-time on this. So I went full-time into Ethereum. Ethereum was an emerging technology that it was really hard to understand, way harder than it is today. And I spent the next 3 years, 2015, 16, 17, 18, learning about Ethereum, and again, it was a pretty steep learning curve. I'm a high school dropout, so I'm not a computer technician or any of those super fancy educated Ethereum people. And by 2018, not only I have achieved diminishing returns in what I could learn, but also the ecosystem was in a pretty unpleasant situation. 2018 was right after the ICO bubble burst, and Ethereum was in a very ugly bottom. Prices were coming down, dApps weren't working, the roadmap wasn't coming together. So that takes us to our next slide, on which I plan on explaining quickly why in 2018 I started Ethereum. In 2018, I gathered a couple friends, and I convinced them on building an application on Ethereum that can do something that you couldn't do with any other technology. That was, for me, a way to show that Ethereum wasn't just the technology for speculating with financial assets or for gambling or for criminal activities. There could be things that you could build with programmable blockchains that really solve problems that people have better than any other technology. And one obvious problem back then and still today is that these days, in our digital lifestyle, we don't own nothing. All the information in your iPhones or Android devices and in many computers, it's stored on the cloud, and you're subject to certain policies, and you don't have ownership of that information. And it's very common that if it's no longer a business for your provider to serve it or host it, they will shut it down, or they will change the terms, or they will start charging you. And one platform that's been subject to these issues was Foursquare. Foursquare was a Web2 app that you had in your phone, and when you went to a bar or a restaurant, you checked in and you got a little collectible. Now, the little collectible wasn't on a blockchain, it wasn't yours, and when Foursquare decided to change their business model, people that had thousands of collectibles were left in the dark. So I was like, why don't we build an Ethereum application on which these little collectibles are NFTs, and because they are minted on a blockchain, they are immutable and you have them forever, and they have all the qualities that NFTs have, like authenticity and provenance and several other things that don't really come to mind. So we start building this, and it goes pretty well. We launched in 2019. Well, I have explained this, sorry, I messed up the order of the slides. So that's the little intro of POAP. By the way, there's going to be a POAP at the end of the talk, so you better get your apps ready and some other housekeeping stuff that's really fun. Now, this way of coming up with the idea of POAP out of wanted to show that Ethereum was useful technology that makes sense brings us what is the most obvious early organs of a company, which is the idea and how to finance it. If we were analyzing major companies, companies have plenty of organs, like legal and HR and revenue, sales, purchasing, etc. But in an early startup, you pretty much have someone, the founder or a group of founders that have an idea. And ideas are extremely cheap, like they're a dime a dozen. So ideas are pretty much worth nothing. But when you match an idea with a little source of financing, at least enough for the founder to come by, then you start having the embryonary situation of an early startup. And this is mostly what I want to cover today, because we could talk about the whole day about the startups. But in the Web3 space, we've been seeing, and we continue to see, extremely exotic ways of financing because of tokens and the possibility of creating crazy speculative mechanisms. And although some of these mechanisms for financing companies are fascinating and awesome, they are at the same time what make starting a Web3 company pretty much a suicidal mission. There's only a handful of cases of successful startups that had completed the cycle, that started with an idea, with some little financing, and that eventually completed a cycle and have become successful, sustainable, profitable business. Most of the crypto companies these days, big and small, are running on either extremely hand-wavy models, or they have launched tokens and they are still somewhat holding up, or maybe they are holding up really well, but normal business that check the boxes of a business that makes sense, I'm not sure I can count to 10. So I was talking about the different models of financing, and of course we are going to talk about tokens, but let's get First, to the easier ones to explain. Bootstrapping a Web3 startup, it's a model of financing that I recommend a lot. This is pretty much the founder of the founding teams running it with their own money, not taking external capital and seeing how they could do it. And this is a very valid model. Many founders work full-time at something else, and then they run their startup on the side. And only after validating whatever idea they had or finding enough traction, they decide to transition to something else that's not bootstrapping. So bootstrapping, it's really easy to explain. It's pretty much not taking external funding. The founder carries the burden of figuring out how to pay the bills. And the bills in Web3 startup are extremely expensive for a bunch of reasons that we don't have time to cover. Then there's another alternative for financing, and we aren't going to talk much about them because I don't think in this day and age it makes sense, but it's traditional VC. Traditional VC, it's an extremely developed model. It's been running for more than 20 years. There are thousands of VC companies, but in practice, and this is an unpopular opinion, but traditional VC has nothing to do with crypto. Crypto startups have a degree of uncertainty that just doesn't fit the model of traditional venture capital. Traditional venture capital has some formulas and some models and time frames, and many companies have applied. In crypto, I don't think it has ever worked. I don't think it will ever work. The only crypto companies that are financed by traditional venture capital are pretty much not crypto-native companies. Like, they could be custodians or financing services or compliance or legal or KYC. That kind of business maybe could qualify by traditional VC. But in my personal opinion, if you are building a business that qualifies for traditional venture capital, go for it. The content I'm presenting here might not be too useful for you. But surely the point I want to make clear, if you are a crypto native company building a crypto native business model, it's highly unlikely that traditional venture capital works for you. And traditional VCs may want to believe that it could work. You are going to waste your time. And now I want to skip for a second crypto venture capital, because that's the hardest one to grok and explain. And I'm going to explain the grants and exotic financing, because that's underexplored, and it's a very viable model for aspiring founders these days. Aspiring founders these days, when they have an idea, they have pretty much the three options I mentioned. Bootstrapping, which is probably not viable unless they have lots of money or some money. Crypto venture capital, which I don't recommend unless they're extremely sure what they are doing. And then there's this grants and exotic financing. Grants and exotic financing means there's plenty of organizations in crypto that have more money than what they know how to spend. This can be DAOs, they can be foundations, they can be individuals, and there are plenty of individuals. There are plenty of whales that you may meet at a conference or in a hallway or in a local meetup, and you present an idea and you're like, yeah, if I had $50,000, I could build this, this, and this. And this happens more often than not. There are even some success stories of companies that are starting out of grants or this kind of financing and have grown to eventually raising millions from VC. So grants and exotic financing, it's a very valid and very honorable way of raising capital for an early Web3 startup that I absolutely recommend. And then, and I left it for the last item on the four models that I presented, is traditional crypto VC. Unfortunately, traditional crypto VC has evolved naturally. I don't think anyone specifically wanted to go that way, in a perverted model of greater fools. There are plenty of highly skilled with plenty of social skills and abilities, investors that are meeting founders with ideas in need of financing, and they will convince them or they will promote them and help them do a token finance company. And that's pretty much a death sentence. It's a minimal chance of long-term sustainable success that a founder gets when they sign a deal with a VC that expects a token. There are so many highly convoluted mechanisms that start to play that even if the business makes sense and it grows and it checks all the boxes, they typically burn the founder out. Founders burn out, it's a pretty pervasive condition in this industry, and tokens make everything 100 times harder. So my recommendation is that first-time founders avoid VC. Even if you believe your idea is great, crypto VC, even if you believe your idea is great, only pursue crypto VC if you have a solid plan that really checks the boxes and doesn't have the classical hand-wavy models like, yeah, we are going to raise here and we are going to ship this and eventually we are going to launch a token and the token price will pump enough that we are going to have so much money to continue building without worrying about runway. That's a success story for VCs, and I don't blame them, but it's this thing that I call it a suicidal model and a death sentence for founders. Eventually, the model of crypto VC, when the regulatory landscape gets better, may have a second shot and it would work. But in this context, on which tokens can't do profit sharing or any kind of revenue sharing or tokenized equity, everything token governed, whatever, or utility token, or all those things, they are ill-fate. They are not worth pursuing. And it breaks my heart. I met some founders this week. I've done in my career over 200 investments, so I must have talked with 1,000 founders. It breaks my heart when I meet a founder with a good idea, full of enthusiasm, that is about to sign a term sheet and do pretty much this devil's pact that's going to drain their energy. So again, my recommendation is, unless you are extremely sure and well advised and well contained on what you are signing up for, just chill and continue your crypto journey, because right now the ecosystem and everything around is such a minefield that your chances of survival are so little that the trade-off, the risk-reward ratio is not worth it. Now, I don't have much time, so I will come up with a couple, before the questions, with a couple of housekeeping items. I plan on doubling down on the contents of this talk in an upcoming conference. I don't know which one is going to be, but hopefully what comes next after this, we will cover some time in 2025. Of course, I'm very keen on answering questions, but I also want you to know that because you came and listened to all this rant that I had prepared, you're going to be part of a POAP that we will all share. And that POAP can be minted using two mechanisms. One, it's a secret word that you just tap in the POAP app, and that secret word is collectibles. The other one, if you don't have the POAP app, is that QR code, which I'm going to try to scan now if you don't mind. This POAP can only be minted while we are here. It looks like mine is minting. But then there's going to be another POAP for those that are watching the live stream or the recording, which is going to be for sale for 0.001 Ether or something, with the proceeds going to the nonprofit foundation, its taker. So I'm going to get to that slide and I'll leave it for a few seconds. This is called an airship. and it explains where to set the funds and the pop that you will get and some other fun stuff. This is not particularly for you to read. It's mostly so it is on video. And the last housekeeping item, which is a fun new launch that we are doing today, it's a GPS minting. This is a way for minting a POAP bound to a geographical location. This one is configured for anyone that's on the range of 7 kilometers from this venue. So I encourage everyone to do the scan location button in the POAP app, get that really fun POAP, and hopefully one of all the minters randomly picked is gonna win one Ether. So with that, I think we can move up to the questions.
All right, awesome. Let's go to the Q&A, you guys. We have the QR code on your right side, and send him the question, whatever you have question for him. Are you ready for the question?
I am.
All right, let's go. So we can have so many questions here, and if you already have some question that people ask for that, you can just upvote it. Anyone? I mean, he did a really great presentation, right? There's no question for him at all. All right.
Don't be shy.
Yeah, and you guys have the POAP apps. Don't forget to use the scan the location, and you can get the POAP like from Bangkok here.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm planning on being around the venue. So if whatever you want to talk.
Send the question. Can you send the question through this one? So people can see the question too. So you guys use the camera to scan this, and you send the question through the screen. Is that working? All right, one second. Maybe we can get. Oh, my. Okay, his microphone's right here. Who want to ask a question? I see it, that guy, okay.
Just the logistical thing. How do you choose, how do you do the randomness of the function to pick the winner of the one ETH? Like, is it chain link? Is it on chain? Are you using any hand?
I love this question. You know why I love it? Because we have worked really hard for the system to be probably verifiable. We didn't want this to be like, yeah, he has won. So we use a product called POAP.fun. POAP.fun is an open source software. It's not set up yet. You can check it out. But it's an open source software on which the system gets all the POAP's ID. And those IDs are tickets for a raffle. And at a given time, there is a little super basic formula that uses the gas usage of a series of logs. And when the number of the gas usage matches the hash or the number of whatever the ticket was, that's how it makes a leaderboard. And I think it does like knockdown system. So it goes knocking down people, and the last standing winner gets a prize. We specifically wanted the system to be probably verifiable and credibly neutral, because otherwise, why could we do it at all?
All right. We have like a lot of questions. So we have about 2 minutes, a little bit. So let's pick a few questions. You can see down here.
Yeah. How to ask to the VCs that ask for token. I think if you don't have a very good answer for why your product needs a token, you have nothing to do with tokens. And you just have to accept that you shouldn't take funding from that VC. And this is extremely painful, but I am pretty straightforward. You don't need to work with VCs that want a token, even if that means that you cannot run your startup. If your startup cannot be run without a token, if you cannot get financing without a token, you probably shouldn't pursue it. Tokens are useless, not at all. Tokens are a fascinating coordination instrument. I expect tokens to create a revolution in human coordination at a scale. It's just that in this day and age, with the regulatory constraints, you cannot use tokens as means of financing. What are the best and conventional ways a founder can fundraise for an idea or an MVP they have? The easy ones, it's a larger L2, the larger DAOs of L2, like Arbitrum and Optimism, and there are many more. Mantle, it's another good one. They have huge amounts of money. They aren't afraid of spending. If you have an idea, you just need to come up with a minimal expression of it, something that can be built with 50,000, 100,000, 200,000. And if the idea is good, they will love funding it. You didn't tell the story of how PoUp was funded. Oh, this is not a secret. I funded it myself. When PoUp raised money for the first time, I was already several million dollars down in spending. And even after we raised VC money, I continue sinking more and more money. It's impossible to run a company that doesn't have a token and goes at the speed of Web3 without a really deep pocket. So again, this is something that needs to be known for any aspiring founder.
We have
this
one more extra minute really for the expensive. Answer. We have one more extra minute for you. So we still have all the questions, so we have one more minute extra for you guys.
Thank you. When PoUp tokens, we have no plans for a token. If the regulatory landscape changes a lot, maybe one day we'll reconsider it, but it doesn't look like it's changing. What's the business model of PoUp? PoUp has two sources of revenue. One is enterprise partnerships. We have plenty of companies that hire us for helping them do pre-judicial collectibles. These companies have businesses like Mercedes-Benz, American Express, Porsche, Goldman Sachs, Swift, and hundreds others. And similarly, we also make money by individuals that buy their mintlings, and they pay $25 per 100 PoUps. And that's working pretty well. The market is really small. There's like 10,000 people in crypto that can appreciate PoUp well. So we don't make that much money with that. But we expect this model to scale very nice once the market picks up. Are angels a good option? Yes, definitely. Angel investors are in the category of exotic funding. So I certainly like that. Follow me on Twitter to see where.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.